All right, hello, my name is Krista and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Krista.
Welcome to Wacky Paw 15 in Las Vegas. Wacky Paw is the Western Area Conference of Young People in Alcoholics Anonymous. Please help me open this meeting with a serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. The topic of this panel is relationships, and I have now asked Alexis to read a passage from AA literature related to this topic.
Okay.
You're welcome. Good.
Hi, everybody. My name is Alexis. I'm an alcoholic. This is from Acceptance, is the answer from page 419 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. One day in AA, I was told that I had the lenses in my glasses backwards, the courage to change in the serenity prayer, not that I should change my marriage, but rather that I should accept my spouse as she was. AA has given me a new pair of glasses. I can again focus on my wife's good qualities and watch them grow and grow and grow. Today, Max and I try to communicate what we feel rather than what we think. We used to argue about differing ideas, but we can't argue about our feelings. I can tell her she ought not to think a certain way, but I certainly can't take her right to feel however she does. When dealing with feelings, we tend to come to know ourselves and each other much better. It hasn't been easy to work out this relationship with Max. On the contrary, the hardest place to work this program has been in my own home.
Thank you, Alexis. All right. Now I would like to welcome our first speaker, who is Andrea C. from Las Vegas, Nevada.
Hey, Andrea.
All right.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Andrea, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Andrea.
Thank God that I'm alive and sober in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous this morning, and thank you for asking me to come out and share my experience. And what a wonderful thing this Wacky Paw thing is. I came here last night, and I thought, wow, this is wild. This is kind of what it was like when I was out there partying. And I looked around this room, and I was going to bring my son and a couple of his friends, and I thought, forget that. I'm leaving them at home. But then I thought, you know what? Look at all these people. Everyone's sober. None of us were sober. And people were having relationships and interacting last night, and they were having a great time. And I thought, that's not at all my experience. It always started out really good and a lot of fun, and everyone was dressed nice and having a good time. And the majority of my friends, you know, they went home and they weren't in trouble, and they didn't crash cars, and they didn't go to jail, and they didn't have all of those experiences, but I did. And I'd never leave the party, and it'd go on for days. And so I'm real grateful that I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm even more grateful that possibly my son that might be going sideways, he has a place to go and he gets to actually have some fun, because those people were having some fun last night. And it was cute. It was a lot of fun. You know, I'm not going to pretend for one second I even have a clue how to do this, because thank God I talk about the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous being the instruction manual. And it really is. It's my instruction manual for life. I don't know how to do relationships. I don't know how to stay in the family. I don't know how to have friendships. I don't know how to be in a romantic relationship. I don't know how to do any of that. And the reason why is because I'm afraid. I'm afraid of everybody and everything. And feelings are not facts. I hear all of these things, the stuff that was read this morning. You know, it doesn't matter how much intellectual knowledge I have, I can't stop the human experience, which unfortunately or fortunately, I've got this threefold disease, bodily, mentally, and spiritually. You know, it's taken a while. I've been in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous since 1997. In February, Andrea willing, I used to always say God willing. I don't think that it has anything to do with God doesn't want me to be sober. I think it has everything everything to do with I wasn't willing to do the work. I'd run in AA. I'd do enough to get relief. I'd get everything off my back, get some freedom, and then I'd rest on my laurels. Our book talks about that. Guess what? I do that in relationships. You know, this panel I read in The Little Deal, and it was about, you know, our ideals. You know, in the fourth step, in the sexual inventory of the fourth step, it's not about sex. It's my favorite part of the book. If I can get the most out of anything in the book, is in those pages of the sexual inventory, because it's about my behavior. It's about my behavior. It's about how I show up in life. Am I continuing to harm others? I've continued to do that, even in sobriety at times. The demoralization and the remorseful feelings that come up when you live that way, continued in sobriety, I gotta go drink. I gotta go do things that change the way that I feel because I can't stand myself. As I told you, if it gets too uncomfortable in the family, I'm running out of the family. I don't care whether they're family or not. Gotta go. If it's the job, people aren't acting the way that I want them to act at work, and I feel threatened and insecure, someone's better than me. God forbid someone be better than me. I gotta go. Gotta go find a new job, and I'm building a case. It's your fault. It's your problem. You did this to me, and I'm a victim, and I'm on the road. I gotta go again. You put me worst area. Still, major work. Major construction needs to be done in the relationship area, the romantic relationship area of my life. I feel anything like rejection, insecurity. I used to take so much pride in all of my ins and outs. I don't know if I said in February I'll be 6 years sober. I came in 97. Do the math. It took a long time for me to get. I could never get past a year and a half. Took a couple of chips that were 2 years, they were all dirty. You know, the bottom line is that there's still some major reconstruction that needs to be done. I feel those feelings. I used to come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I do inventories with my sponsor, and thank God for Leslie. Leslie was a sponsor with me for a long time, and she taught me how to do some things different. She told me about that. You got to practice this behind your own door. Your behavior is what keeps taking you out. Not that you're craving a drink. Because once the drink was removed from me, I didn't need a drink. I still needed to change the way that I felt. But that was about rebuilding a relationship with God. That was about an inside job. That was about a miraculous transformation that the book talks about. How do I get there? I needed to learn how to change. I'm still learning how to change. But I do those inventories, and I took so much pride in. I'm not jealous. I'm not one of those possessive girls. I'd look at those women in those relationships. I thought, what the hell is wrong with them? Just move on. Go find another one. You know what? Go and find another one all the time wasn't always the answer. What that did was making me feel worse. I kept stepping on the toes and hurting everybody. And I did not know how to change those things. Come into Alcoholics Anonymous today, biggest defect of character I have is jealousy and insecurity. I didn't even know it. I didn't even know it. I can't, and if I feel threatened, I feel insecure. Another number one thing is you give me a little bit of rejection. Not only do I have to go, but I'm going to hurt you on the way out. You know, I don't want to live that way today. The book has taught me a lot. It's been tough. 5 to 6 is, I don't know, I thought I was just adopting something that I'd always hear in AA, that 5 to 7, you don't see a whole lot of people. They do those countdowns and people stand up and there's not a whole lot of people between 5 and 7. And then when I turned 5, I was really struggling and I thought, stop telling yourself that. You don't have to be one of those people. You guys, it's been the hardest year of my life. Sober. And it's not active alcoholism, but boy, do I have active untreated alcoholism. You know, the treatment for me is in the book. I think the ultimate relationship that I'm aiming for today, because it's my only way out. I've tried everything else. The relationship with a kid, with a mom, with a boyfriend, a job, or whatever I think it is, it's not my answer. It fills me up and makes me feel good, but it doesn't last. The shine wears off. What's going to last for me? What I believe is that I really adopt these spiritual principles, because when I'm living by that, I feel good most of the time, no matter what's going on in my life. So that ultimate relationship, moving towards my ideals, those things that come out of that sexual inventory where it says about our ideals in there. Leslie taught me years ago, you're either moving towards them or you're moving away from them. You pick. You want joy and happiness or you want to be miserable. How do I change? If I could change by myself, I wouldn't need to keep coming here. I have a busy life just like I'm sure everybody else. To take time out to go to meetings, sponsor people, pick up the phone, do all this stuff. Sometimes I think, this is too much. But you know what? I'm the kind of girl that had to wake up to 2 bottles of vodka. I had to fall downstairs to crawl to my keys to get to the liquor store to pray. I learned how to pray in the car with the brown paper bag. Please, God, let this stay down as the first bottle's coming up and I'm puking everywhere in the car. So the second one would stay down, because that's the only way I could show up for life. It's the only way I could have a relationship with anybody. It's the only way I could go to work. It's the only way I could feed my kid. It's the only way I could talk to anybody. It's the only way I could do anything. Today, I don't have to fall down the stairs to crawl to the keys to get to the liquor store so that I can be a mom, so that I can be an employee, so that I can be a girlfriend, so I can be a friend. I struggle. You know, people in the world dominate me. What I think people think of me, how I think people feel about me. It'll make me so insecure that I'm paralyzed with fear. I can't even walk out my front door to go to a meeting. For a girl like me, that's a death wish. Or I can wake up in the morning and I can say, please, God, help me. Help me. And the outlines in the book tells me exactly what to do. It tells me exactly how to start my day. It tells me exactly how to treat people. It tells me when I'm wrong, I promptly make amends. All of those things allow me to have relationships in every area. But for me today, it's got to start with me and God, because I don't have the power to do that. I don't have the power to wake up in the morning and just go in the world and act right. I do not know how to do that. I'm so grateful for my life. I love Alcoholics Anonymous, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Andrea. All right, now I'd like to welcome our next speaker, Stan M. from Las Vegas, Nevada.
My name's Stan Malonis. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Stan.
They got me in the middle of two women. That's what I like. It's the kind of relationships I like. But anyway, I'd like to welcome the newcomers or anybody who's new. I'm glad you're here. I have a friend in Atlanta. He says that there's two things that alcoholics shouldn't talk about in an AA meeting. He said honesty and relationships. But I don't know. When it comes to relationships, it's kind of like my sobriety. I don't really like to take credit for it. I really feel like there's a lot of times I really just taken a little direction and things have kind of worked out. I've learned some things over the years. When I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't really have no relationships left. Nobody wanted anything to do with me anymore. There's a line in the 12 and 12 in the 8th step. It says that we bring out the worst in others. When you're like that, you don't have a lot of relationships. You know, it's kind of like if you had to go to a job and they said, what's your best asset? I bring out the worst in others. I don't think you're getting the job. But I've learned some things over the years, my boy's here from Bend. I went to his graduation one time, and there was a counselor there, and the counselor was talking about, he said there's three things that make up a relationship: trust, communication, and commitment. And I thought, that's true. If any one of those things falter in a relationship, then the relationship starts to fall apart. If you don't trust somebody, it's hard to have a relationship with them. If you don't communicate with them, it's real hard to have a relationship with them. And if you're not committed to the relationship, then it's almost impossible to have one. I know that there's times in my life when I have relationships with people and I lose respect for them. And once I lose respect for somebody, the relationship's pretty much over. I don't know how long it's going to take to get to that point, but somewhere along the line, the relationship's going to end. And I don't want relationships with everybody. I try to seek out people. I mean, I'm just that way. Before I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't like people at all. I hated people. And I'm not saying that I like everybody now, but I like a lot more people today than I used to. And there used to be a guy in Alcoholics Anonymous named Terry Gorski. He used to run around and give relationships talk, and I heard his talk one time. And there were some things in there that I picked up on that I really liked. He said, if you're going to get in a relationship with somebody, watch the way they treat themselves. He said, if they don't treat themselves very good, they can't treat you any better than they treat themselves. I thought, boy, that's really true. You can't. You can't ask somebody to do something they can't do. And but see, I'm the kind of person that when I'm in a relationship with somebody, I want them to step up to the plate and be better than what they really are, right? And that's not necessarily true. He said he went to a counselor one time, and they sat down, and the counselor says, okay, I want you to write down on a piece of paper what kind of woman you want. So he wrote down all this stuff on a piece of paper, and he gave it to the counselor. The counselor looked at the piece of paper. The counselor looked at him and says, what would she do? What would a person like this be doing with a person like you? You know? And he got mad and left, right? And I can understand that, you know. A lot of times in a relationship, all I had was a mouthful of gimme and a handful of want, you know. And you know, there's a lot to bring to the table. He also said one other thing. He said relationships are hard, and they're a lot of work. And that's true. There are a lot of work no matter what level they're in, whether it's, you know, the opposite sex or at work or whatever. But if we didn't have relationships, there really wouldn't be no need for no steps. But I know that he said that healthy people look at a relationship, and if it's too much work, they walk away from it. See, I never really was that way. What I'm really like is when I was about... I don't even know if I was a year sober yet. A girl came to a meeting, and she shared about wanting to commit suicide, and I went and asked her out right after the meeting, right? And figured, hey, she turned me down. And then she came back around and wanted to go out, and we dated like, I don't know how long, a couple of years, and we'd get along really good for 2 days. And then on the third day, I wanted to kill her. So she'd go back home, and then we wouldn't see each other for a whole week. And then she would come back. We'd spend 2 days together. Then we'd want to kill each other, and then she'd leave. And we did that dance of death for 2 years. And but that's how it is, you know. And but I always lived with the idea in the back of my head that if only she would change, life would be great, right? And I'm sitting in an AA meeting one day, and a guy says, rather than being with somebody that you need to change, why don't you be with somebody that's already the way you want them to be? And the light went on in my head. I thought, what a novel idea. It's so much more fun to try to change people, right? And but see, that's the big problem. And so we dated for a couple of years, and then I went to... my sponsor, and I says, hey, you know, we don't get along. I'd like to get somebody in my life we can get along with. He says, why don't you go home at night and pray and ask God to put some in your life you can get along with? I said, that's a great idea. So I went to my sponsor, and I said, Dick told me to go ahead and start praying for somebody to be put in my life. He goes, no, no, no. He says, real important in that 11th step, you pray only for the knowledge of God's will for you. Only is a very important thing. I said, yeah, that's really neat. I walked away from him and thought, I'm going home and praying for what Dick told me to pray for, right? And I prayed for that, and a woman came into my life that if I wrote down on a piece of paper what kind of woman I wanted, it would have fell really short. You know, the problem is that when her and I first started dating, I was dating a lot. And I felt like I was in high school making up for what I missed in high school, and I was dating a really lot. And not my casting over or anything, but I was going for... I was going for a lot of quantity, not a lot of quality. But anyway, when she came into my life, you know, I remember sitting at the gym one day, and I'm talking to this guy, and he goes, my wife and I have been up all night fighting. I thought, man, I don't do that. If somebody and I don't get along with that day, I just don't see him no more. I go on to the next. And so when her and I started dating, and then we started living together, I felt like somebody threw me in a bathtub of cold water. See, her and I dated for 2 years because I kept living with the idea in the back of my head that she's going to want to change me, right? Because that's what always happens. You get in a relationship. I went to a play one time in New York, and the play was, "You're perfect, I love you, now change," right? And I would always wait for somebody to try to change me. And when they start pounding on me to change me, that's when I would leave. I remember this one gal I was dating one time. She goes, we were riding on the ski lift, and I was eating an orange, and I just threw the orange peels down on the ground. I don't usually litter, but I figured the animals or somebody would come along and eat them, you know. And she started getting on me, just really getting on me about doing that, right? So I had another orange in my pocket, and I wasn't hungry after the first orange, but since she was complaining so much about me, I just took out the other orange and started eating it too, you know. And she said, I noticed that every time I started getting on you, she kept on me about quitting smoking. She said, I noticed you start smoking more. I said, I do that unconsciously. That's the way I am with people. Well, when I got in this relationship with this gal, she goes to Al-Anon. And she never tried to change me. She would talk to me about things, but she never tried to change me. She never nagged me. She never tried to change me. And what that did, when I knew things were bothering her, and because I knew things that my behavior was not right with her, it allowed me to be my idea to change. It's kind of like Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I sit in these rooms, and nobody really harps on me or tries to change me. What it is you share your experience with me, and then what happens is it becomes my idea to put it into my life. I don't know why I am that way, but I know I'm the kind of person that if you tell me things constantly, I'm going to go the other direction. But if you talk to me about what you've done and how things are going, and it becomes my idea, I'm more willing to do my idea than I am your idea. And that almost killed me, but because it had to be my idea to start getting sober. But I know that there was times in that relationship when I felt like, in the beginning, that I felt like somebody threw me in a cold bathtub. And then I would pick a fight with her because I wanted her to fight with me so I could leave. And then I wanted to blame her for the fight. And she's had too much Al-Anon to play that game with me. And I remember I went to Dick and I was talking to him about it. And he had a nice relationship for 26 years with his wife. And he says, you know, he never told me what to do. He just told me a story. And the story was, he says to me, he goes, well, when my wife and I first got married, she did the same thing with him, picked a fight with me, ran upstairs, packed all her luggage, and came back downstairs and said she was going to leave. And he says, well, this is your idea, not mine. I don't want you to leave. And she dropped her suitcases and she started crying and she goes, you know what? I guess I'm going to have to stay and change my attitude. And you know what? I realize that in relationships, I'm going to have to change my attitude and that things aren't always going to be my way. And my job isn't to try to change the other person. My job is to try to accept and love them exactly the way they are. You know, I remember my wife, when we got together, she had a 6-year-old boy. And his dad's a really good dad to this kid. But sometimes he wouldn't come and get him for long stretches of time, whether he was working or doing this or that. So I started telling her one day, you got to call him and you got to tell him to get over here and get this kid and do something with him. And she looked at me and she goes, the gal that doesn't get on his ass doesn't get on your ass. Enough said. I'm done. And I want people to be different because it's me. You know, when Ryan asked me to do this, he said it was on the fourth step. I says, yeah, I'll do that. Then about 2 or 3 weeks later, he tells me on the fourth step in relationships. And you know, the fourth step is the beginning of learning how to get along in relationships, in my opinion. You know, when I was about 90 days sober, I did a fourth step. What I did was I wrote down all the people I resented and why I resented them. And then Bill's really smart because on the next page when I sat down with somebody, he started asking me questions like, you know, perhaps the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick like us. In other words, can I see myself in that other person? And because the reality is that I can run around and I can try to change people all the time and I can always do that. But the reality is I'm just not wanting to look at myself. And if I don't look at myself, then there's never going to be any change. Because if I'm not the problem, there's never going to be a solution, ever. Because people are always going to be out of line. People are always going to be doing things. So by doing a four-step and asking myself, can I see myself doing what these other people do? Yeah, a lot of times I can. And then it asked me, where did I set the ball rolling? Where have I been selfish, dishonest, frightened, and self-seeking? You know, being dishonest is wanting people to be different just for me, you know, and selfish. And so I did all that. And then there's a line in there that says, is our resentment fancied or real? And a lot of times, in order for me to have a resentment, I have to have a lot of fantasy in there. There has to be a lot going on in my head that I'm creating that's not really there. See, I create a lot of things that aren't really true. And I believe them to be true because they're coming out of my mind. And the problem with that is I go off and base that off of that. Before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was very insecure. I was very crazy. You know, if I was dating somebody, I want to know where they're at, what they're doing, what's in their purse, who there's on there. I mean, just insanely insecure. I mean, if I could have tied them to the bed and left today and then came back, I probably would still ask them questions. Did somebody come over to the house? You know what I mean? Just totally insanity because I create all this stuff in my head that seems real to me. And the very thing that I'm trying to control and have is the very thing that I'm driving away from myself. And so my wife and I, when we got married, she had a six-year-old boy, and I thought, well, him and I should bond. You know, I got these ideas, and we're going to go, and I'm going to take him to Boy Scouts, and we're going to do things together. We're going to hang out. And I get all these, like, scenarios in my head about how life's going to be, right? So I take him to Boy Scouts, and the very first thing they do is they give us a model plane. And I'm like, I had a resentment right away. I mean, when I was a kid, they gave us soap boxes. We carved them out and we raced them, right? That's what I wanted, but now they changed the script on me, right? So I put it off. So Boy Scouts is on Monday, so on Sunday night, I sit down and I start making this model plane. I let Danny help a little bit, but mostly I'm doing it all. And while I'm doing it, I'm bitching and complaining about it because I don't like doing this task, you know, and I'm not very good at doing stuff like that anyway. So I go ahead and I do that. And then Monday we go to the Boy Scouts, and the den mother comes over. She goes, he's got to get some awards. You need to go up there with him. I said, Danny, do you want me to go up there with you? He goes, no. Oh, I was mad. I don't like rejection. I'm petty, too. And so I thought, well, I'm not doing nothing with this kid no more. I'm done with him, right? In my mind, I'm thinking all this, you know, and she come over, she goes, you can't do this. He can't go up there without you. So finally he said, okay, and we went up there, and he got his badges, and I'm thinking, I'm not going to do this with him anymore. You know, I'm trying to be nice to this kid. You know, I've got all the scenarios going on in my head, and probably acting like a six-year-old in my mind. And so we race the plane, and we get done, and when we get done, I said to myself, now I'm going to ask Danny when we get done with this why he said that to me. Now, you could have said, okay, what I want you to do is I want you to take a piece of paper and I want you to write down everything you can think of why he didn't want to go up there with you. See, a lot of times resentments and things that happen with me happen because of something that happened to me in my past. You know, I didn't want to do things with my dad because he always embarrassed me. I mean, he was very nuts sometimes. And I never wanted to do that with him. And I always felt I automatically thought that Danny felt the same way like that about me. And so we went outside. I thought, well, ask him. And I thought, no. And then I thought, why don't you ask him? Well, he's a six-year-old. They always give you one pat answer for everything. I don't know. So I think I'm going to ask him, and he's going to say, I don't know. So I says, okay, I'm going to ask him. So I said, Danny, I said, why did you do that? I'm telling you, I could have wrote for until I was dead. I don't think I'd ever thought of the answer. He says to me, he goes, you complained so much about making the airplane, I didn't want to bother you anymore. Right? See, I don't think of things like that. And I read a book one time by Joe Torre, and he said that when you have a resentment against somebody, you ought to go talk to them and lay everything out on the table, because what you're thinking and what they're thinking are always two different things. And I found that out to be very, very true. So in the fourth step, I start asking myself them questions. like where have I set the ball rolling, and what was fancied and real, and I try to look at the other person's position, and I start doing that. And I can't do it when I got a resentment going on, but sometimes it can calm down. You know, I had a sponsor in Alcoholics Anonymous for 12 years. I've only had two sponsors. And my first sponsor and I we became very close over time. He was my boss. I started working for him when I was like a year sober. He was my boss. We became roommates. We worked together. We did everything together. We traveled a lot together. We did everything together. And one day, we talked 2-3 times a day sometimes. He really taught me a lot. I mean, I learned a lot from this guy. And one day, him and I never talked, no more. I mean, one day. Not like, well, we stopped talking and it got worse and worse and worse. It was like one day, done. And we never talked for several years. And sometimes we'd sit in meetings next to each other and we wouldn't talk to each other. And, you know, I know that's not the AA way, but sometimes that's just the way it is. And I know that about 3 weekends ago, my wife and I went on our 16th wedding anniversary over to the Vidara, and we were sitting there having dinner. And, you know, they say in the book to pray for people you have resentments against. There's a faster way to get over resentments than doing that. I mean, I could pray for somebody tell who knows how long. But in the fourth step, it talks about how, you know, it talks about a prayer in there. You know, how can I be helpful to this person? How do I treat sick people and all that other stuff? And if I do that and take that action, I get over the resentment a lot easier than if I just pray for somebody. But anyway, I was sitting there at the dinner, and my wife and I looked at each other, and we were talking. I said, you know, we ought to text him and tell him that we want to thank him. See, I realized that after time, I don't have to be friends with somebody all the time. I don't have to run around with them. But I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I need to have some kind of relationship with them on some level that's not hostile and that's not resentful, and especially with somebody that helped me for so many years. And I went ahead and I texted him and I said that I said I want to thank you. My wife and I want to thank you for all the help that you gave me in the beginning, and that we're celebrating 16 years. And he was a part of that. And he texted me back. He said something really good. He said, "Congratulations. I'm glad you didn't go with that other gal. You know, the one that wanted to commit suicide." And not that she's a bad gal. She's just her and I personalities didn't match. And he said, maybe in order for marriage to work, we have to marry above our spiritual pay grade. And that was really true. See, the problem that I had with my wife when we first got together was I always felt that she was too good for me. What would a girl like that be doing with somebody like me? And it really was hard to adjust to that. But what really happened was eventually I got a place in time where I felt like, you know what, I really do deserve somebody good in my life. I don't drink. I don't have really any bad habits. I try to do the right thing. I go to 7 to 10 AA meetings a week. Why shouldn't I have something nice in my life? But, you know, when you've never had nothing nice in your life your whole life, it's hard to adjust to having something nice in your life. You know, you keep wanting to prod it and poke it and make it worse and get all that drama going and all that chaos and all that insanity. And you know what? I've gotten to a point in my life now where I can't do a lot of drama and a lot of insanity anymore. Matter of fact, I try to avoid it because I just I don't have the mentality for it. And I can't say that I have a perfect relationship, but I have a relationship today that I'm really comfortable with. And it's more her than it is me. And it's because she allowed me to change, and she allowed me to do it by being my idea to do that. You know, I don't know why it is, but people always want to change everybody. And I'll tell you, man, trying to change other people is a really lot of work, man. I've tried a lot of ways to change people, and none of them are very successful. Anyway, I'm glad to be here today. Thanks.
All right, thank you, Stan. Finally, please help me welcome our last speaker, Leslie B. from Las Vegas, Nevada.
Hi, I'm Leslie. I'm an alcoholic. I want to thank Ryan for asking me to be a part of this panel, and welcome to everybody if you're new or you're not new. And my sobriety date is November 5th, 1991. I got sober in my 20s. And is there anybody in this room that's around 6 months sober? Anybody? Nobody. I was in a real active home group called the Hardheads and Hard Hats meeting. And I had gone with my sponsor at the time out to the Lake Mead retreat, which is the lake here. And I was with a big group of people. And I walked into this guy telling just a horrible joke. Now, I grew up working in the gaming industry. I have a lot of older brothers, so I'm not a shrinking violet. And this was the most offensive joke I could not tell you from the podium. I said, oh, my God, I don't like that guy, you know, and I just wanted to stay away from him. Well, we'll be married 19 years this year, and so be careful what you pray for. When I was drinking, I had never been married before. I liked very short-term relationships. My sponsor later told me those are called one-night stands and not a relationship. And I liked a two-legged drink. I wanted somebody to change the way that I felt. And I would use alcohol or him as often as I could to change me. I grew up in a family that my parents were doing things that were way beyond my years and what I was exposed to. And so I didn't ever have anything to so-called model. And I thought, well, I'm just not going to ever get married. That was my ideal at the time. And when I met Bob and someone that so lovingly gave me what Stan read, which was the outline of how I could work toward my ideal, because I had no idea what that was going to look like. Because I'm not able to have children, and Bob has a son, and I was always jealous of his ex-wife, and that was something that I was never going to be able to achieve. And when my sponsor took me to the book, and it just quickly said, I'm not going to read it to you because I hate that, but I'm just going to, she said, to get to our ideal, I had to kind of ask myself the questions were asked and then work in reverse. You know, where had we been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? Whom had we hurt? Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy like Andrea talked about? Check on any relationship I'd ever been in. But she said, but what would it look like if you weren't selfish, always thinking about Leslie? If I wasn't dishonest, and I love what Stan talked about, is I'm intentionally harming someone or wanting him to change or whoever to change. And was I inconsiderate? All the time, I always thought about how it affected me and what was going to happen in my life. Well, we got married when I was almost 2 years sober, and I had realized that I really wanted the complete opposite of how I'd been living up until I got into Alcoholics Anonymous, but I needed your help to be able to change. One of the things that Stan talks about and he didn't share today is he doesn't know how to stop doing something he can't stop doing. I can't do it without your help and God's help. And a demonstration of what that would look like. When Bob was 10 years sober, I worked in gaming, and I was diagnosed with something that caused a lot of problems in my spinal cord. And we're going back and forth to UCLA, and I had the good fortune to spend some time with a gentleman that would talk about, he'd say to Bob, I know your story will be better if she dies, but let's go to a meeting. But he would talk about, what are you not willing to let go of to have a better relationship with God? And a lot of that is, I don't want to let go of what you're doing and what I think you should be doing and how you should let me off the hook.
And I was bedridden for a long period of time because of that spinal cord problem. And Bob would change my bedpans. And we amassed a huge amount of debt, which has since been paid off, and we've amassed some more. So that's how Alcoholics Anonymous sometimes works. In June of last year, my husband changed his sobriety date after 23 years. And it rocked me to the core, because having both of us in Alcoholics Anonymous for a long period of time, or for me a long period of time, was very difficult. The gossip and the judgment that happened in our community was very difficult. My biggest character defect, as some of the other people have shared today, is anger. And when I'm in fear, I want to react. But you guys have taught me that I made a commitment. I made a commitment to Alcoholics Anonymous, to my sobriety date, November 5th, 1991, which requires action and commitment to keep that date. My wedding date is September 26, 1993, and that requires action and commitment. He's never going to let me live that down, to keep that. Because I realized my ideal was I wanted to be in a monogamous relationship, and I had never been monogamous before. That is only through God's help. And that may not be your ideal. It's okay, but it is mine. One of my dearest friends, longtime member of Alcoholics Anonymous, did an intervention in our backyard. I will never forget that. Because I believe that in your lowest moment, Alcoholics Anonymous will rise to the level of your needs if you allow it. I work every day. I have a strong work ethic and have kind of carried the load in our family. My husband worked for a long time for one of the biggest companies in the world. And I came home from getting the natural blonde put back on my roots on Thursday, and my husband said, I was terminated today, and I was afraid to tell you. I'm not proud of that moment. I didn't know, and I talked to Stan before the meeting, I didn't know if it was because he was in his own fear, he was afraid of my anger, and Stan said maybe he didn't want to put any more pressure on you. And I will tell you, it wasn't my best moment. I went to my sponsor. I went to my dear friend Andrea, and I talked to Bob's sponsor yesterday, who's a very good friend of ours, just rock. And he said something I'm going to share with you, and I hope you don't like it as much as I didn't like it. But the fabulous Johnny Kay said to me, you have to rigidly refrain from criticism of any kind. I said, come on, John. The guy changes his sobriety date. I'm paying all the bills. Now he's unemployed. And you're telling me I have to rigidly refrain from criticism of any kind? That might be easy for some of you to do. Today, because I'm talking to you, I haven't criticized. But it's not easy for me to do that. But what I remember when Bob was in treatment, the sponsor that Stan talked about called me so I wouldn't be alone on a holiday and wanted to make sure I had somewhere to go. And he said, all those years that you've had health problems, do you think Bob ever wavered? And I'll tell you that I don't think that he did. And he said, what I think you have on your hands today is a sick friend. Do you think you can find some way through the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous to be helpful to this sick friend? And with your help, I think that I can do that. because Bob had a sponsor for a long time, Wino John, and he used to rub his hands, and a lot of people, if you're in Las Vegas, know him. He would say, if you don't have a program behind your own door, you don't have a program. That good thoughts plus good actions produce good results. And I know that God's got us right now. I have a very good job because I write on my computer every day, restraint of tongue and pen. And I'm going on a long business trip on Monday, and I'm traveling with one of the owners of our company that has no idea there's ever a problem in our relationship today. He paid me a Christmas bonus, which in this economic environment he certainly didn't have to do, and I wrote an email thanking him and the other owners. I've been taught to do that here. And the email I got back really surprised me. He said, I want to thank you for your gratitude, of course, for the money, but more importantly, I want to thank you for your dedication and commitment to our company. Some years ago, I had quit in a resentment, didn't run it by anybody, and left after a long time, made a mess of my work life. Sometime later, the CFO of that same company contacted me and asked me if I wanted to come back. And you know, it's different today because I've done exactly what Stan talked about, the trust, because I don't really work for them, I work for God. I have a commitment to them that I show up no matter what, and that I communicate with them. I had a leg graft in 2002, and I'm going on a trip that's a walking city, and the president of our company said to me as I was leaving his office yesterday, he said, I want you to take care of yourself, do whatever you need to do, if it requires more cabs, what have you. I want to take care of the people that take care of us. That's Alcoholics Anonymous. I've cleaned up the wreckage of all that unsavory stuff I was doing when I was drinking. I have a commitment to a man that's unwavering one day at a time, regardless of how I feel about it. I took my vows seriously. There's an old-timer in the community that talks about, if you think the steps are difficult, why don't you try the wedding vows slick? And you know what? I don't particularly care for this guy, but I do appreciate what he said. And I want to thank you because my most difficult moments are what Wino John talks about, is practicing the principles behind my own door. Thank you.
Thank you, Leslie. The Wacky Paw 15 Host Committee would like to thank all of the conference participants and attendees for making this weekend possible and magical. The next panel meeting in this room will begin at 11:15, and the topic is Steps 1, 2, and 3, Workshop with Mickey B. Please help me thank our speakers and leader again.
Yay, thanks, guys.
And after a moment of silence for the alcoholic who still suffers, Alexis will lead us out with a prayer of her choice.
Oh!
Sure. Our Father.
Our Father,
who art in heaven,
hallowed be thy name.
Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory forever.